Blog Talk Radio.
On today's episode of The Unknown Show, we're going to talk to Zarina Zabrinsky, the author of the book Iron. We're also going to talk to Leopold McGinnis, creator of the Red Fez website. And Robert Vaughn is going to come on and read from his new book, Microtones. Hi, this is Bud Smith. You're listening to The Unknown Show. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for listening. We have a good show today. We're going to talk to Zarina Zabrinsky. She's going to come on and talk about her book, Iron, out from Epic Rights Press. We're also going to talk to Leopold McGinnis. He's the creator and director of Red Fez, which is a great literary website that I dig a lot. And like I said, Robert Vaughn's going to come on. He's going to read from his new chapbook, Microtone, which is out from Sereva Barva Press. So all that's going to be going down. But before we get into the nitty-gritty, talking to some of these fine folks, I wanted to give a shout-out to the lovely Ray Blairy, who was nice enough to bring home beer tonight from the corner on her way home from the subway. And when she came home, she made tacos. So this show is brought to you by Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, and it's also brought to you by refried beans and beef tacos. A great combination. I recommend you try it yourself. Also, I wanted to point out that Uno Kudo is open for submissions right now again. It's a magazine that I'm really into. I edit over there. I'm looking for submissions. If you're a writer, if you're an artist, send something to Uno Kudo. That is UNOKUDO@gmail.com. Looking for short stories, poems, anything you have, send it over. Submissions are going to be open until the end of April. That's going to be a print and a digital for anyone who's interested. Also, check out the new Cleft Jaw. It's a zine that just came out. Frankie Metro and Dustin Holland put together a handmade zine, and it was scanned digitally, and it's out on issue.com. But search Cleft Jaw on Google. K, cleft jaw with a K, K-L-E-F-T, jaw, and that'll bring you all kinds of cleft jaw goodness. So right now, give me 1 second. I wanted to play a song here before we get started. Here's a song that I dig a lot. It's in the list here. Sorry about this. The song is called Last Day of War. This is by Brendan Castner. He's on the show about a week ago, and we'll play his song again. Thanks.
I'm on the lawn in my brother's pot hat.
should go our separate ways. So I drove down 37 with my tears falling the bay. Dylan McKay from 90210. Every time I cross the street, I tap my feet to follow my own lead. So I'm so goddamn happy now. I'm discreet. Those have been passing me. Getting shot on the last day of the war. Oh, you stupid horse. Looks like you'll have to break my legs to bring me to despair.
Called Last Days of War by Bootsy Spankins. I was listening to Brian Fugit and Michelle Elquin's show last night with Michael Gosinski, and I just happened to hear that they played a Bootsy song too. They played Raindrops Keep Falling on My Head, and I thought I'd play another one. So that's pretty much that. He's a friend of mine from down there at Toms River, New Jersey, and I'm glad to hear he's going to be singing at my wedding too. He's going to sing some songs, so keep your eyes open for that. It'll probably be some kind of big deal bullshit thing, you know. Anyway, here's another song by Brennan. This is called No Braces. Hey, Zarina, are you there?
Hello? Yes. Hi, bud. Hi.
Oh, I want to take your,
you.
I saw you on the switchboards here. Yeah, I can hear you. How you doing?
Oh, good, good. I don't like phones. Otherwise, I'm swell.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Oh,
phones suck, man. Phones are the worst, you know. That's you know, the thing is, I got to do this radio. I do this radio show on Tuesdays. Other than that, I don't use this phone for anything. I just it sits there on the table and it gets all dusty. My wife has to clean it off for me, you know.
Yeah.
So how's it going? What are you up to?
You know, things are good, I guess. Fine.
Yeah?
You know. Yeah, I'm very busy. Looking forward to doing whatever we're doing here. I don't know if you're going to ask questions. I prepared a story to read,
cool.
Like about 7 to 8 minutes, I think.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And if needed, a short, just written poem, but hopefully just a story and questions or whatever. I'm open. I'm drinking coffee here, and you know.
That's great. What's your coffee situation? You got like a certain method you like? Do you have a percolator? Do you grind your own beans? What's up with that? What does Serena Zabrinsky do with her coffee?
Oh, it's actually it's shameful. It's pretty shameful because my favorite coffee is a gas station coffee.
What gas station?
Sort of like donut, only I think it's a step down.
Yeah.
I think, you know, self-respecting people don't drink coffee. I do, but I actually really like it. I think there's a lot of caffeine there, and I write very well after I have my gas station coffee. So
that's cool.
Not too fancy here. What about you?
I got we drink all our coffee, and then yesterday we were like, oh fuck, all our coffee's gone. And then I realized that we have Kahlua coffee up in the freezer from like 8 Christmases ago. And we were like, oh, okay, well, guess we'll try that. And you open it up, and it's just like French vanilla, horrible shit.
The type I like. See, that's the type I like. You should send it my way, and I'll send you something fancy, because I don't like fancy. I like Kahlua French vanilla shit.
Oh, really? Well, listen, here's
the
deal. I'll send you a quarter of a bag, what's left of this old French vanilla coffee, and you can send me something fancy. Does that sound like an even trade?
Yeah, no, I would leave for my shitty coffee. That's
cool.
The deal, totally.
I'm gonna get your info. We'll talk on Facebook. We'll exchange addresses and stuff, and I'll put this in the mail for you tomorrow. I promise.
There you go. Sweet.
So where are you calling from? Are you calling from the San Francisco area, Bay Area?
Area is the right way. Yes, it is San Francisco area, but my area is called San Bruno, which is not even East Bay. East Bay is fashionable these days. East Bay is sort of like Brooklyn to Manhattan.
Yeah, yeah.
Is the East Bay to San Francisco. San Bruno, I don't even know what it is. It's the Bronx of San Francisco. I don't know, but I love it here. It's quiet. We have sun. It's a perfect writing resort. We live here like hermits. We have birds, squirrels, and us. Yeah, it's very good here.
That's cool. What? How many birds do you have?
Sorry?
How many birds do you have?
Birds? We haven't been counting lately, but we have many birds, and we have black squirrels.
Oh,
and
you mean they're like outside?
They're not like
in your home.
Yeah, we had a lot of debates with the writer friends because a lot of people don't believe me that we have black squirrels, but it's true, we do.
No, you definitely do. I've seen them. I've seen them out there. When I've been in California, I've seen the black squirrels. They're strange looking animals.
Yeah, they look like death. They, you know, you walk up to your garage, to your car, and you see a black squirrel there with a nut in their teeth, and they look like it's the death holding you in their mouth, something like that. They're quite nightmarish.
Yeah, they look like you said, they look like dead things, just waiting to attack you. So I wanted to ask you about your book out right now with Epic Rights Press. I've read it. I love it. It's a collection of short stories called Iron.
Thank you.
Would you describe what the book's loosely what the book is about, what it means to you, to people who aren't familiar with it?
Yeah, you know, this is one of the questions that I'm still mastering. I was always perplexed. Ever since I was little, when people ask me, what's the book about?
Yeah.
I don't know if the books are about something. And now it's the time to answer this question about my book. And it's even worse than any other book.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a bullshit question. You're right.
But no, well, but I respect it. I might ask you what your book is about. So it's fair enough to ask. It's about possibly me, but not really. It's not really biographical. A lot of people ask me if it's, you know, they assume that if you say I, that's what really happened to you. And here is a disclaimer, not necessarily, most likely not, although did. But it's been loosely described as the aftermath of the collapse of the Soviet Union and the story of survival.
That's exactly how I would describe it myself. It's the book. It's a few short stories, but you know the size of the book is very very misleading because it's a huge book. It's a book with a big impact. It has a small footprint page wise, but a great collection of stories. And I'm especially fond of the title story Iron. Great little story. When I say little, I just mean the space it accompanies. You nailed it right there. The stories they're about mostly things that happen behind the Iron Curtain and the people who are dealing with life after the fall. And I'm anticipating your next release. You have a novel coming out this year?
Yes, I do. I do have a novel coming out, and it's called We Monsters.
Uh-huh.
And it is very different. It's bigger. It's a novel.
Yeah.
And I guess, let's see, what was the log line? I had to create a log line.
Yeah.
But the log lines are so misleading. The log line goes something like this. A true story of a soccer mom who moonlights as a dominatrix.
Uh-huh.
So the story that I'm going to read today is one of a satellite story to a novel. It's not a part of the novel, but it's been written around the novel, so I think it will shed the light on it a little bit. But basically, part of the story is happening in a BDSM dungeon.
Uh-huh.
And the main interaction is between a psychologist who is trying to analyze the fantasies of many, many people, including the major dominatrix herself.
Great. What's the story called?
The title is We Monsters.
Uh-huh. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to ask you, so the title of the story is also, it's the title of your book also?
Oh, it's not a collection of short stories. It's a novel. So.
Yeah, I know. I thought you were, so you're reading a story from the novel then. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm sorry. No, the story that I'm going to read is called Zigzag Lady, and it's kind of obliquely related to the novel, although it's not a part of the novel.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, so it's like a B-side. It's like a B-side of your novel coming out, and hopefully it'll be like a sneak peek for people who are anticipating the book that's coming out later this year, November, right? Sometime in November?
Yes, November.
That's great.
Date.
Yeah. Would you read the story, Zigzag Lady?
Would you like me to start to read it now?
Sure, yeah.
Okay, can do that. Zigzag Lady. A few years ago, I broke up with my Arabic lover in the outburst of Israeli-Palestinian war, but not for political reasons. While it would be a stretch to call me an Israeli, I am certainly a shiksa, a product of Russian and Jewish love. Although my Jewish half is the wrong part, on the father's side, and not considered Jewish by Jews, my Russian part is Jewish enough to be not considered Russian by the Russians, so I can choose to be anything I want. My lover was truly and solidly Palestinian. He came from a small village occupied by the Israeli and had fought against them fiercely as a teenager. Elated, I quickly associated myself with the ascending side and fully indulged in big, fat Jewish guilt. I heard Aida's overture behind the throbbing rhythm of the nightclub. The Carnelian dilemma suddenly brought a new zest to my life. The more bombs my historical ancestors dropped on his part of the promised land, the more I felt for Habibi. Everyone called him Habibi. Habibi was a treat. Well-versed, intelligent, emotionally complex, he never asked personal questions. He combined the appearance of a Shiite terrorist with the gentleness of a licensed psychologist, which he incidentally turned out to be. He spoke five languages and danced salsa, samba, and waltz. Oh, how sorrowful were his soft brown eyes! How they sparkled as he spoke about his land and people! My heart trembled like a bird and landed into the gigantic palm of his outstretched hand. How deep were the furrows of his heroic forehead, how I longed to smooth them with my fleeting fingertips. Flying on a traditional chemistry roller coaster, I went through writing poetry, rereading 1001 Nights, considering converting to Islam, and wearing a headscarf during the long courtship. Then there came a night when, after sampling Palestinian stuffed cabbage that had a striking resemblance to my grandmother's gulubtsi, and were hand-rolled personally by Habibi, and drinking anise alcohol drink that smelled and tasted like my childhood cough syrup, I found myself in his arms. The act of love was also fueled by two bottles of cognac and a couple of joints, and could be loosely described as passionate, although it reminded me of a Thai kickboxing match. Unfortunately, I did not get to appreciate the full potential of my lover, a self-described stallion and a sexual champion, as another Palestinian hero arrived at the scene. By that time, Habibi vegetated in a drunken stupor. The new arrival decided to take over. Not that I'm against sharing apartments with roommates in order to save money and send it to their oppressed relatives. I'm just against sharing my precious body with complete strangers. Untrue. I'm not against sharing my body with complete strangers, but it has to come on my own accord. Since at this instance, the sharing was not sanctioned, the romantic evening was hopelessly spoiled. Drunk as I was, I left my unconscious stallion and his helpful friend and cried my eyes out in a taxi cab. Next day, on Saturday, I went through a mini breakup after mass. Although the romance didn't go full scale and had a ridiculous ending, it lasted a long time and became strangely intense, or maybe I just needed some drama and wanted to cry my eyes out. Maybe it is good for your eyes and your retina cells regenerate this way or something. I had a big pity party blasting Pink in the car and finding the most cheerful Russian pop song on YouTube. I cleaned the bathroom, beat my nails, wrote some more poetry, danced to They Had It Coming from Chicago Musical, and called my ex-husband complaining about the lack of meaning in life. We maintained civil and friendly relationship and consoled each other when in trouble. My ex-husband was en route from Dubai to Beirut and told me to pick him up a new electric saw from Home Depot. Although the saw might have come helpful and could have led to another interesting development of Israeli-Palestinian conflict, I decided to sublimate my flaws and find peace in my children and art instead. So, come Sunday, I took my son to a show. The show was indeed very odd, but that was the only performance that I could find on such a short notice. A dingy theater hosted a symphony orchestra playing popular tunes to a magic act. The magician wore a fire engine red suit, had a high-pitched voice, and started the show by flying the toilet paper around the stage with a vacuum cleaner. He then wrote a lot of numbers on a whiteboard and drank water from many paper cups. In between those acts, the orchestra played marches from Aida, Carmen, and the Flight of the Valkyries. Everything was swell. My son was genuinely interested, and I was lost in my suffering. The last act was called The Zigzag Lady. The magician brought on stage a volunteer from the audience. I wiped the tears and saw Mistress Joanna, my long-forgotten dungeon co-worker, walking up the stage. Mistress Joanna was an experienced dominatrix with a specialty in suspension. I was a fake mistress undercover. In reality, I was writing a novel about sexual fantasies, or so I said, or so I thought. Well, at any rate, during my brief but fruitful employment at the dungeon, I worked back-to-back with Mistress Joanna. We had the same body type. It was a contrast thing. She was barely legal. I was an ageless beauty. Our numbers included catching a spy, running on our phones after a 70-year-old stark naked client and fighting him, threatening to torture him if he doesn't confess. He never did. Making out on top of a plastic surgeon, a regular customer wearing nothing but a mini skirt and three condoms, and suspending a British businessman from the ceiling by his balls. Hey, I had to do my research for the novel. We also drank lots of green tea and talked about literature, writing, and foreign movies during breaks. Mistress Joanna was a Berkeley student trying to obtain her master's in architecture. She was studying Portuguese and writing short stories. I was writing a novel, so we had a lot of exchange going. Mistress Joanna was sensitive, intelligent, tactful, and completely together. There was something mind-shattering in watching her getting off her bike in the morning, removing her helmet, and dragging her bag stuffed with stiletto heels and Frederick's underwear inside the small pink Victorian house where she changed into a vamp woman with blood-red lips and a hungry smirk. Mistress Joanna presented a mystery to me. She liked her job, but she was not a clear-cut dominatrix, nor was she clearly submissive. She was disturbing, elusive, and vague, like a sphinx, like a forgotten nightmare, like a silent German movie from 1920s. And here she was again, her pale, willowy body in a red velvet magician's box. It was no accident. There are no accidents. My son guessed as he watched the zigzag lady being split in parts. Oh, Mistress Joanna, when I saw the magician deconstructing you in three pieces like a Picasso painting, your childish face smiling innocently from the top cube of a monstrous structure, the jigsaw puzzle of life collapsed in front of me for the millionth time. Your gentle white hand waved at me feebly, far away from your body. No, it wasn't Picasso. It was Dalí at his wildest. Cranach turned kitsch with a childish virgin posing for the dream of the great masturbator with all the ruthlessness of Las Vegas reality. I don't care if these illusions are self-indulgent or private. They are fucking relevant. The magician kept squeaking from the stage, a human Home Depot electric saw, layering the words like cards. Illusion, delusion, illusion. The words kept coming in a blizzard like a whirlwind of fake snowflakes. Illusion, delusion, illusion, confusion. You think, what is the connection? Here it is. Just as the lame magician manipulates his naive audience, life pulls us into the illusion of logic. You think you come in one piece, but you don't. We all are zigzag ladies. Germans fuck up Jews. Jews fuck up Arabs. Arabs fuck up Americans. Russians fuck up pretty much everything that comes their way. And mistresses and slaves are all the same. Subs in a suburb dungeon pretend to serve cheap whores, and everyone is fucked up and just trying to screw each other. Men hurt women, and women hurt men, and then they all cry in the pouring rain, listening to cheesy music, afraid of death and loneliness. We are weak, blind, and helpless in face of this dubious magic, but we pretend to be in control and say beautiful words to disguise the cheap and dumb show. And like a zigzag lady from the box, life itself looks at us, a horrid, sadistic Mona Lisa, with its sinful and detached smile, and she waves at us with the gentle hand of a professional torturess in all its heartbreaking loveliness, and we love it, love it, love it to pieces.
Wow, that story is really something else. I really love the line about when you describe the woman as a silent German movie, and then towards the end when you do that line about listening to cheesy music in the rain, that's humanity right there, you know? That's how we deal with all our problems, right?
Well,
thanks for reading that.
Yeah.
So before I say goodbye to you, I wanted to ask you, for people who don't know, what's your website? What's your website called?
ZarinaZabriskie.com.
Okay.
Just the way my name is spelled, and it's Zarina Zabriskie.
Yes. Yep. I'm going to put it up on the Facebook page for this unknown show as a link so people can see. Zarina Zabriskie, it's spelled Z-A-R-I-N-A. ZABRINSKI.com.
But there's no N. It's a complex name. Zabriskie without N. Zabriskie.
Oh shit.
ZABRISKY.
Oh, okay. There you go. I'm gonna stick that link up there, and I think most of the listeners are people who see us through Facebook, so they'll definitely see your website. And I hope they get to see you read, because it was fantastic seeing you read in Albuquerque. It was pretty much the highlight, one of the highlights of, It was like the Mothpocalypse, poetry reading, Corcoran Roberts.
Wonderful.
Oh, that was great. Corcoran Roberts, Lynn, Frankie, it was great.
Yeah,
I got to meet Sammy, too. It was very nice to meet Sammy.
Yeah,
and,
same.
So everybody, check out Zarina's book Iron, and also look for her new novel coming out, We Monsters. Zarina, what's the best way people can pick up Iron? Is it just is Amazon just the best way to grab it, or through the Epic Rights site?
It's either Amazon or website or Epic Rights Press.
Okay.
So, all these, yeah. Thank you.
Hey, it's very nice talking to you today. I hope we get to do it sometime soon, okay?
Thank you, Bud. I'm looking forward to more and seeing you and say hi to Ray and to everyone. Thank you for listening.
Oh, I definitely will. And thanks for reading that story. I'll talk to you soon, Zarina.
Thank you, Bud. Have a good show. Bye.
Bye. Okay, next up, we're going to talk to Leopold McGinnis. He's the director and creator of the Red Fez literary website, which has recently undergone a complete overhaul, a complete redesign. And I'm thinking it's looking sharp as hell. Leopold, you there?
I'm there. Thanks.
What's up, man? How you doing?
Good. I'm doing good. Like you said, we did that whole redesign, and that's, you know, like 4 months of obsessive work. So it's kind of nice to be on the other end of it. Yeah.
Now, what happens for stupid people like me, when you're talking about doing a website redesign and you're getting into doing a lot of coding and stuff like that, is that what you're pretty much doing?
Yeah, I'm mostly doing programming and coding. I mean, I guess it's become my new art project. I don't write anymore, so it's, you know, I get obsessive, and it's kind of a fun way to be creative while holding down a full-time job, because you can kind of, you know, do pieces of it here, pieces of it there, but it's also kind of like an unending project. You just it never stops. But I mean, before like WordPress became popular and all these kind of, you know, blogging tools came around that could publish for you, essentially, it was all HTML.
Yeah.
And so we started building our own kind of content management system before that, not too long before that, but about a year or so belonged that. And it sort of became path dependency, right? It was easier for us to keep upgrading our own by hand installing something new. So then it sort of become a bit of a trap, but a bit of an advantage, I guess, because we're always forced to upgrade our own thing. But then, you know, I learned a lot, and I'm really getting obsessed with it, as some of you might know. So I don't know if that answers your question, but
yeah, that definitely answered my question. So for you, website design, running your own website, website design of your own gig, redfez.net for people out there who don't know. Check out redfez.net. Mm-hmm. And basically, I describe Redfez for people who don't know as like it's kind of like a catch-all of weird and beautiful writing. Small press is the descriptor that people throw around, but it's a silly word. Basically, it's just just great literary writing and funny, heartbreaking. Check it out, redfez.net. And how long have you been doing this site now? Did it come up on a 10-year anniversary?
It's 10 years, yeah. So I was just, for the latest issue, Pat asked me to write the, you should also mention that you're an editor or a editor or what, I don't know, whatever you call yourself there, but it's great to have you as part of the team also.
Oh yeah, I can't admit to all the shit I do because, you know, I got like IRS after me for certain things and like,
well, we don't
you
pay
don't know,
so IRS, yeah. You're that. Yeah.
Well,
we'll work on that.
I try to keep my my connections kind of shady because I don't want people tracking me down, you know, for various things I'm doing, you know. But yes, I edit Red Fez, and man, it's fun. It's a fucking fun time, you know.
Yeah,
a lot of fun.
You know, it's great to see so much people having fun and people having fun with it. I mean, it survives because of all the editors. It amazes me, and I guess it keeps me up at night sometimes, just worrying like, well, you know, why? When I think about it, why are people doing all this reading of? So, you know, you got to admit sometimes really bad submissions are just we get 100 submissions a month, you know, and like just going through that every month. And I don't like, I'm glad I can just focus on the programming pieces because, you know, and people seem to be having fun and I really try to spend my time making sure that people are having fun. It doesn't become dramatic as, you know, small press can get or, you know, just tiresome, like reading pieces and sort of grinding it out. And I just don't want to feel like grinding out. But to return to your original question, I've been grinding it out for 10 years on some levels. Yeah, so, you know, it's just some punk in a basement who thought I couldn't get published. I'm sure a lot of your listeners have similar stories.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had no patience for publishing.
Yeah, you were a punk in a basement. You couldn't get published. And how old were you when you started?
I was 24, 25.
24? Yeah.
Yeah. So I had some experience with web programming, but I mean, back then it was just HTML, right? It wasn't. It's most people know how to do that now. Not very complicated stuff. And you know, I don't have a lot of patience for publishing or submitting. I just, you know, it just is so much work. And that was back in the days when it was like self-addressed stamped envelopes. And I live in Canada, right? So I would have to somehow like scam ways to get stamps from the U.S., right? Which you can't just buy them in Canada. So you have to like, you know, call your relatives.
Yeah. You couldn't even submit. You were like Black Book. They're like, if a good reputable place got a submission from Canada, they just immediately, you know, threw it on the pit of shit they're gonna light on fire. They didn't even open it. Like, it's just
probably
from Canada. We're gonna burn this one.
Yeah, three seconds. I don't know the author. Plus, they're from Canada. Fuck it. Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, it was such a scam trying to get these stamps, you know, and then. Send it to them and have it sent back. And then, like, you either wouldn't hear anything from anybody for years, or, I mean, not years, but sometimes years, like 6 months, 10 months. And, like, you know, there's all this, which I understand the no simultaneous submissions. We asked for that now. I never really liked that. I get it now. But, you know, back in the days of mail, it just you know, took forever. And so I didn't think I rejected. And then, you know, again, like a young buck, I submit to, like, The New Yorker and, like, Playboy, all the big names. And it's like, of course, you get rejected. Like, you know, I'm dumber and shit. I don't know what I'm doing. And, you know, for me,
it's funny, though, man. It's really funny. I know what you mean. Like, it seems so stupid and pointless to submit to those places, but I really admire the people who still, not knocking you, but I don't submit to those places.
Mm-hmm, no.
But, like, for instance, man, I was just talking to Ben Laurie last week, and, he just sent something for The New Yorker, and they fucking published it.
Wow.
They rock on, right? I mean, how about that shit, you know? I know sometimes I talk
That's
to
awesome.
Misty Rainwater, and she's just randomly sending shit out there, sending stuff to Paris Review. Hey, more power to you. I hope, Misty, if you're listening, I hope you get some shit in the Paris Review this week. Rock on.
Yeah. No, that's great. I mean, I admire that myself. I mean, it's just not me, you know? Like, I think...
Mm-hmm.
Well, really, my instinct was like, you know, screw this. I'm just going to start my own website, you know. And I only
rejected, right,
like,
right on.
10 times, 15 times.
And nowadays, it seems like anybody can do their own upshoot literary site. Yours has been kicking around for 20 years. That seems like about 150 years in the literary website bloodline. You know, it seems like Red Fez has been around.
So much has changed. You know, like, I guess, you know, my initial lofty goal, and I always have lofty goals, but it was to, you know, to change the publishing industry on some level, because it was so insular, and, you know, trying to submit to, you know, academic institutions, and they all sort of publish their own stuff they like. And I just remember reading all these journals and being like, not liking any of it. And being like, well, of course they can publish me, because it's got to be better than this crap. And then realizing, they like the crap they publish, and not to be, you know, to put down those journals or anything,
like what
but
they like.
There's a lot of insularity. You have to know the right people. You have to be in the right groups. If you've been published by this, then you'll be published by that. And I just thought that was a lot of rigmarole for just trying to, you know, for a lot of art that I didn't think was getting attention. And I wish I could say that Red Fez, led that charge. I don't think that we did by any stretch, but we've definitely been part, I think, of a broader change brought on by the internet of being, there's plenty of room and there's plenty of space and it's cheap to publish this stuff and for people to connect, and it's getting easier and easier. So I think, you know, that change has happened around us and we've been part of it, and, you know, that's sort of exciting to see. So, you know, we didn't lead it, but definitely it's been kind of interesting to be caught up in that whole shift. And I still think it's still shifting. I think the bigger stuff is yet to come. So
where do you see, this is one of those like canned questions. It's like came from the fucking, the book of questions I'm supposed to ask. Where do you see Red Fez in 10 years from now, Leopold? Or...
Oh, God.
but anyway, like, don't answer that question. Have you?
No.
So what do you see is the next change for Fez? If you had to imagine it.
You know, well, some of it's top secret, and it will be revealed soon. You know, I didn't expect. I remember when I first started Red Fez, I came across this other literary site that was shutting down. It was like from Edmonton, actually, where I live now, and the guy had been publishing for like 10 years, and it was just his online site, and
Pink Fez,
you know,
right?
Sorry?
It was called Pink Fez, right?
Pink Fez, yeah, I stole the idea from. No, he was just, and then his site was shutting down for 10 years, and I was just like, oh man, that's a major bummer, like, how do you just put 10 years into something, and then just, you know, it just dies because you're too busy or no one reads it. I think people read it, but, you know, it's just you get tired and you have kids or whatever. And I was just like, you know, screw that. That's not going to be me. I mean, I'm going to drop this puppy in 5 years if it doesn't do well and if it doesn't, like, conquer the world. And, you know, here we are 10 years. Not to say that I haven't done well, but, like, you know, we're definitely not conquering the world or getting paid to do this or anything. So I know it's hard to think ahead to, like, well, another 10 years, another 5 years. But I think what's gotten us here is just focusing on the next step. And I think at Red Fez you'll see a lot of, like, more community stuff. Like, we're trying to get books up there. We're trying to get community events up there. We're trying to just make it sort of not just a place where you get published and you see your name, you know, always publish Red Fez or kind of thing. But where readers and writers can live, and that's always where I wanted to be. I wanted to be sort of a natural place for people to gather, whether we're publishing you or not. As an author or as a reader, you can come and you can, like, connect with authors. Right. And you can find out, you know, I'm going to add Zarina's website and her book to the site, hopefully, when I get off the phone here. And just so people can come there and say, oh, yeah, here's Zarina. Oh, she's published in Red Fez. And here's her book. It was great to hear her read. And hopefully they can, you know, at some point, not now because you can't really post anything, but, like, connect to the radio show and the interview she did tonight. And, you know, I think we can do that. We can move towards that. And it's a challenge because it's mostly just me doing the programming. And our challenge has been that we've never have money, so we can't hire programmers. So it's just always just been me learning more. And that's okay. I've enjoyed it, but it's slow going.
The thing that seems to be is people keep getting better and better with computers, you know? So, like, for instance, I mean, you know, the way you find editors, maybe that's the same way you find programmers in the future, you know what I mean? Like, just, like, doing that. So,
and this crazy
okay,
programming
Leopold, that would be $1,000 for that advice. Send me a check.
Check? All right. I'll put, but you don't. But you shouldn't say that on the radio because the IRS is now going to be looking for that.
Send me cash, Leopold. What kind of money do you have in Canada? What do you guys use?
Canadian Tire money.
Send me Canadian Tire money.
All right.
Hey, Dan, so I want to ask you. I want to ask you one more thing before we have to go, and that's that's probably going to turn into like two or three things. Let's be honest. How many people have you actually got to meet up with? There actually, honestly, is a whole community of people around. around Red Fez. I mean, you're talking about creating one. There definitely is a community of people. How many people have you really gotten to meet up with in person?
You know, a lot and not a lot, considering how many people I think are actually sort of, you know, tangentially connected or directly connected to Red Fez. I mean, you know, when Michelle was on board, she was really big into setting up all these events, and those were really kind of fun, and I happened to be living in Toronto at the
Michelle
time.
Michelle McDonald.
She was with Red Fez for 5-6 years and did a great job. She's like, you know, a huge part of Red Fez is her. You can see it there.
Yeah.
And she's moved on to Literary Underground, of course, which your show is part of. And so she's very good at, you know, setting up all these, you know, radio shows and events and really getting people to connect, which is fabulous. And so when I was in Toronto, I got to meet a few people in Toledo and then Chicago later on. So, you know, I've met Pat Simonelli in person. I've met Tim Murray to do the Red Fez radio show, Michelle, of course, Michael Grover, and John Dorsey, and, you know, just sort of kind of like you, I get to be showing up at events, you can kind of connect to people, but the trick is being stuck up in Canada. It's
you step out from, you know, behind the curtain, they do like a drum roll for like an hour, and you step in, they're like, now introducing Leopold McGinnis, and you like jump out, and there's like smoke, that little smoke bomb that goes off and shit.
That'd be
great. Here I am, America.
I can get behind that. Probably I'm an introvert, right? So I'm just like, crowds of people I don't really know. And I'm fine once I get into it, but at first I'm like,
I hear
but
you.
I hope to keep meeting people. I'd like to, and we still, all of our followings in the States, despite the fact I've been, sort of leading this thing from Canada for 10 years. So I hope maybe that we can get an event going up here sometime, or we start connecting with some more Canadian artists. That would be fabulous.
You know? Imagine it.
Yeah. So
you
I hope to see a lot more.
I'm lucky because I live in New York City, so people just come here, you know? I was lucky enough last weekend, the weekend before, I got to hang out with Jonathan Penton from Unlikely Stories. He was just in town,
Hang
out, go out for some beers, it was a lot of fun. And one of the other Red Fez editors, Andy Misenheimer, he lives like 4 blocks up the road. We didn't even know.
That's crazy.
New York City is a small world, you know?
Well, yeah, if you've got a – how much is rent there?
I don't pay rent. We're squatting. This is what I'm talking about. I don't really want to point this stuff out, but we're squatting in the boiler room. They don't know we're here, but we've been here for six years. No rent.
Okay.
It's great. We got a pit bull and it eats, you know, keeps people away, and it eats all the rats that come in. So it's good.
Yeah.
It's nice.
A sweet gig. Well, if there's another boiler room around, I'll consider coming out there.
Yeah, well, the boiler room is pretty big. There's a spot. We actually have a cot, and when people visit, they stay in the cot. So you can't bring your family, but if you want to come to the city, Leopold, you're always welcome to crash on our cot.
Sounds great. I'll bring my own blanket.
All right, man. Rock on, dude. So listen, man, it was great talking to you, and I'm glad you called.
Yeah, thanks,
and good luck with Red Fez's future, and I'll catch you around in the editor's lounge over there, all right?
Yes, we'll do that. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, be good, man.
You too.
Take care.
Bye.
Okay, next on our show is going to be our final guest, and this is Robert Vaughn. Robert Vaughn is a writer I respect a lot. He's the flash fiction editor at JMWW. He is the writing editor at Lost in Thought magazine, which just put out a new issue, which is awesome. Lost in Thought 4. I believe it is. I think they're up to 4. And he also recently put out a chapbook with Cereva Barba Press called Microtones. Robert, are you there?
I am here, bud.
Hey, man, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you doing?
Well, it's going good, except I got an email from David Carter before the show.
Yeah?
And he asked me not to curse at all because his 98-year-old mother was going to listen in.
Oh, dear Evelyn, I just adore her.
Yeah, so unfortunately, I'm going to try not to curse at all during your segment because I think that, you know, Evelyn just mostly wants to hear you read. But
okay.
I think I let her.
She probably doesn't want to hear the
slip.
F-bombs.
Yeah, we're just going to say, I'll say fudge or something like that.
Yeah, too bad you didn't have some sort of whistle in the background that every time you used a swear word, it went like, doo-hoo.
Yeah, well, I wish I could go back and, like, edit things, like, do, like, post-edit room stuff, you know, just put in woo-hoo, all that crap. But
that would be awesome. But, you know, I have to say, because Evelyn is like a second mother to me, you know, David and I go all the way back to college, so we're old friends, as you know. You've met us both. But Evelyn is the most forgiving person on the face of the earth. She is better than Jesus. And
yeah.
I adore her, and I'm so happy that she's wanting to listen in. So it's great to have any of our listeners. I really dug what you were talking about with Leopold. I have, as you know, I have so much loyalty and love for Red Fez. I'm an avid reader and have recently been able to crack the nut, so they say. So I have some work up there, and I love the revamp. I've just noticed it. I just went to the site while you guys were talking, and he has totally revamped.
Yeah, I tell you what, man, the new Red Fez site looks great. I liked it before. I like it a lot. I like it better. I can't believe it. But it's just one of those sites. You know, there's just a few of those literary sites that haunt. I don't really have all the time in the world for a lot of them. But I dig Fez. It's a good site.
I really do, and you're still reading the creative nonfiction there, right?
Yeah, I'm reading. That's a great. So you're basically setting me up to plug it. It's awesome. Send everybody who's listening, if you're thinking about submitting something creative nonfiction, means an essay. It means I think Hunter S. Thompson, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas, that kind of thing.
There you
basically
go.
Basically, something pretty true. 99% true. Don't stretch the truth too much, but it's nonfiction. Keep saying
stretch
that.
Stretch it as much as you want. Come on.
Yeah. Keep saying fucking nonfiction, fudging nonfiction as you lie, okay?
Right.
Yeah, man. Sorry,
no, it's
Evelyn.
Cool to hear Leopold's voice because, a lot of these people who've had sites, Jem Michelski, my boss at JMWW, that's been around since mid-2000s, 2006. And, Leopold's been around since, 2002. He's been in the biz for a long time. So it was really great. I admire him, and it was fun. I would love, we should really try to pick a spot and do a reading, if not New York or Toronto. I love going to Toronto, too, by the way. But, someplace. So, and we'll call it Red Fez, maybe Red Fez, JMWW, and some other thing that wants to jump in, and we can just do this fun thing.
Well, it's funny because, Brian Fugit, he's in Ohio. I don't know. That's kind of up there. Maybe he wants to jump in too. I'll talk to Brian. Maybe he does these things too, and they're always fun, man. Brian's a fun.
Yeah, that would be cool.
Yeah. You ever meet Brian Fugit?
I haven't met him in person, no, I shouldn't say that because you meet so many people at these AWP things.
Yeah.
And it's like a freaking, every single moment you turn around, you're like, oh, you're so-and-so, Nate Pruitt, whoever, it's like, so I may have met him, but the name doesn't pop up someone right away to me, except Facebook, so.
True that.
Yeah,
so anyway,
not sure.
We could sit here and drop names all day, old fat cats.
Oh, shit.
Yeah,
that's easy to do, right?
Uh-huh. I want to ask you some questions about your chapbook.
That would be
your
cool.
Your poems out. It's called Microtones. What is the generalized theme of the collection? What's it all about?
Well, I don't know that there's really a standalone theme. I can't say, incest is the theme,
I know some of your older ones have that. That's why I asked.
Yeah, I think for me what happened was I was heavily submitting for the past 4 or 5 years, and I had a lot of things start to stick. And then I had enough where I started to look at, if I were to put together some sort of chap, what would be the pieces that either stood out for me or that got a lot of readership? Because, when you submit to a lot of online places, you'll get a certain amount of readership from that. Especially I used to that Red Fez really kept track of that, actually, with the last site. I'm not sure with the new one. I haven't really thoroughly. Okay, yeah. So, and then also places like Fictionaut, too. A lot of people bitch about the idea that, so-and-so amount of people have read it. But I kind of like that because, for me, it was a gauge or a meter to know how popular, in a sense, a piece is, right? So,
yeah.
I kind of just called together 20 or 30 pieces and then revamped them or revised them. And then I was just at the beginning of starting to shop them around when I just had this magical sort of serendipitous moment through a reading in Boston. I ended up, Timothy Gager runs an event up there once a month called Dire Literary Series. And he hosts it out of a really nice little gallery up there. And actually, I had this set up with him, I want to say, like, as early as 2010. We had connected online, and we were readers of each other's work, commented on each other's work, and something fell through that first time, either on my end or his end, or we agreed to set it up, like, at a later date.
Sure.
So I went up there Easter weekend of last year.
Uh-huh.
What's really cool about his reading series is he starts it out with an open mic for an hour, usually tries to slot in like five or six readers in the open mic hour, and then he has three featured readers, three or four, that are the next hour, say, you know, the next span of time. And you got each of the featured readers get 15 or 20 minutes. So that particular night, a mutual friend of ours, Gloria, came to read, and she was really nervous because she had flash fiction to read, and she's known as a poet. She has a couple poetry books already published. Gloria Mendock. And I knew her from online, and she's really well-respected, and I knew she had a small independent press, but it just wasn't on my brain. I wasn't connecting that up. I was nervous about the reading. I didn't really know what to read. I never do. Even like tonight, you're going to say, hey, pick a few things from Microtones. And I had to like randomly go, oh, shit, what am I going to – oops, sorry, Evelyn.
Sorry,
what am I going to read?
Whoop, whoop. You know? Whoop. Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, so after the reading, we went out to grab a bite, Timothy and Gloria and I. We went to this really busy restaurant, and it was Easter weekend. And there were all these kids your age running around with – Easter ears on, like neon Easter, you know, like Easter bunny ears. Crazy, crazy energy. We're shouting. We're sitting in the bar area on these stools. We just start talking about shopping around manuscripts and what's it like.
Yeah.
And Timothy was kind of like kvetching a bit. And Gloria just sort of leaned over to me and she said, well, I would publish you, Robert. And this really gentle voice. And I looked at her. I mean, I looked at her like it was out of a movie. I swear to God, bud. My jaw dropped and I was like, what?
Yeah.
And she said, I would publish you, you know, and I just checked it. I was like, this is not the right environment to even pursue a conversation like this. I had to go back to the place I was staying that night and write it down. I was supposed to see Gloria the next day.
Yeah.
They have this really kick-ass group up in Boston called the Bagel Bards. So we were going to all go out to Sunday coffee. I was going to meet her whole gang of poet buddies. And finally, that morning later, I said, Gloria, I gotta ask you, were you serious about what you said, you know, at the bar last night? You know, and she was like, absolutely. And that's when it all hit. Like, I was like, holy cow. So here now, almost a year later, I've got Microtones. It came out at AWP. Yeah, and it's a chapbook of 24 prose pieces and poems, like, so a combination of both.
Cool.
There's not really a theme. I mean,
not
the
really
title.
A theme, yeah.
The title itself, obviously, is derivative of music. It comes from music, Microtones. The inspiration for that was Harry Partch. He's this kind of outsider musician from the last century. What really drew me to his story was that he was this guy who dropped out of college and went into the military. This is like in the early, you know, like World War One, or maybe, you know, it's like the early part of the last century. And he ended up, like, kind of just dropping out of society for a while. He, like, rode the rails. He was a hobo for, like, 10 years. He just couldn't adapt back to, like, working himself back into life, real life.
Yeah.
And then he went the other way, where he developed this whole idea about microtonal scale, sort of like, you know, music notes between the scales that we now know, like the A scale, the B flat scale, that kind of thing. The 7 or 8 note scale or whatever Western music is based on. And he wrote books. He developed these instruments that are still housed at some universities that still use them. Just this genius guy, this brilliant guy who was really always sort of this outsider. And his story just really stayed with me. I watched this movie about him on UbuWeb. Are you aware of UbuWeb?
No, I am not.
Oh, God, you got to go there. It's got all of this left-wing, well, not left-wing, all of this avant-garde art. It's dance, it's film, it's music. It's all one word, UbuWeb, UbuWeb. It's an amazing place. And that's where I came across this short film about Harry Partch, and I watched the whole thing.
Yeah.
And so that's what gave me the inspiration for the piece. I like the whole idea of being an outsider, of being, you know, on the fringes, sort of the downtrodden. I mean, these are common themes in my work. So so that's kind of the background about that.
So that's cool. Yeah. So it's so basically it's just, it was cool because, like you said, like, I think what you're saying, if people who are listening aren't aware what fictionaut is, if you're a writer and you're, I used to really dig, actually, MySpace, because you had a really cool community of writers who would kind of, like, comment on things you would do. Facebook is cool for it, but it seemed like there was more of, like, a blog community in MySpace. Well,
Yeah, I think so.
And sometimes you would actually get, like, legitimate critiques. And that's what fictionaut is. It's a place where, you know, people, like, most of the writers on there are pretty badass. And you can just put something up, and if you're looking for it, you'll get legitimate critiques on it. People point stuff out, and you can use it as a tool to edit your own work. So,
and on top of that, you can gain readership. I mean, some people link it back to their other social sites. You know, they'll put the link up on their Facebook or Twitter page or whatever. But yeah, I think, you know, it's a pretty supportive community there, and you know, it goes through its own crap like every group does. You know, it has its own, like, detractors and people that are disparaging and whatever. Right. But I think overall the idea behind Fictionaut and some of these other sites that have happened online are really potent, and you can use them to your advantage as a writer. You really can.
Yeah. What I usually do is I copy and paste "you suck" and I put it just on everybody's story. And I just click and I just send that, like, in mass, you know, to like 600 people at a time, just to try to help people out, you know, try to help.
That's perfect. Yeah, that's really like what I'm looking for, is just knowing how badly I suck, and then I know I'm right, you know.
Yeah. So on that note, I don't think you suck though, Robert. Would you read for us, man? Would you read some poems from your new chapbook?
That would be a great honor. Yes, I'd love to. The first one's called "The Outlaw." This is actually the first poem in Microtones as well.
Uh-huh.
"The Outlaw." I slice my pinky while he watches me chop carrots in his kitchen. He's told me endless reasons why moving in would benefit Star and me. He's a good man, wouldn't hurt us. I know this, I believe him, but my scars run deep. He says, "Who makes you laugh more than I do?" He opens another beer as I run cold water from the tap. It's true, this outlaw, this curmudgeon. The water runs over my finger. The cool liquid mixes with my blood. I watch my future run down the drain.
Well, that's
the
right
outlaw.
There, man.
So that's the opening.
Yeah, that's good, man. I actually haven't, I ordered it. It hasn't showed up in the mail yet. Living here in the city is tough with mail, you know. Sometimes I got to go and walk down to that post office, and it's tough down there.
Yeah,
man.
I know.
It's tough,
I remember
man.
I remember my years from living there. It's like, it's sort of a hit or miss thing. Like, you just don't know. Like, things are supposed to show up when they do, and then when they don't, you go, "Arr!" But you'll get it. You'll get it any day now.
I'll get it. Will you read some, you got anything else you're willing to read?
Yeah, I've got a couple more. I'll read a couple more for Microtones, if that's okay.
Yeah, please.
Okay, this one's called "When the Time Comes." My parents watch every single news program. They like the gore, the strange happenings in the world. Often they discuss these topics at the dinner table. And so when the story of Nicholas Breen comes up, Mom says, "That was awful what happened to him," sitting, stirring mashed potato. No, I'm sorry, let me start that over. "That was awful what happened to him," Mom says, stirring more butter into her mashed potatoes. "It was his own fault," Dad says as he chews, mouthful of T-bone steak. "Do we have to get into this now?" I ask. "How was it his fault?" Mom wondered. "He was 6 years old." "Old enough to know better," Dad said. "Old enough. I wonder if I'll be old enough to know when my time comes."
Oh, that's the big question, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Oh,
well, and also it's also like this, okay, is there, in a sense, if this kid is the same age, if this kid is 6 years old, how much do we overhear when we're that age where we go, holy cow, like I'm way over my head here, you know?
Yeah. I work construction, and I love it. I love working construction. It's a lot of fun. You know, it's a challenge every day. But I work with a lot of, like, real negative people who don't mean to be. You know, that's just how they are. And they're a lot like the father in that story, where they'll just be, like, talking about a certain job, you know, something we're doing. And it won't even be, like, completely relevant, but it will just be all about how somebody fucked this up. Can you believe they did that? And so, you know, and it's just like, yeah, exactly. And it's like, give me a break, man. You know, everybody makes mistakes, and quite a sentiment, you know?
Yeah. I know.
Give us another poem, please.
Okay. This one's called Recollection, and actually I read this at the AWP Heat reading. There was a reading that I ended up kind of being thrown into the host position. One of our friends got ill, and so I was a co-host, one of three hosts. So I read this piece called Recollection. He wipes away sweat trickling down his brow. It's so damn hot in the church. His wife's face is smeared. She fans the program. Makes no difference. He notices the sun is high, laughing at him. The pastor takes the podium, fingers the mic, maneuvering it closer to his mouth, opens with, "Anybody ready to be saved?" The man tries to force the youngster in the park from his mind. The pastor chants, "Come on, people! Who's ready to be saved?" "Should I raise my hand?" he wonders. His wife rotates toward him, damp spots near hairline, her lipstick teeth bared.
That's some heavy-duty shit right there.
Yeah. I was thinking about actually saying this one's for Evelyn, but then I thought, no, not the context of this piece, you know, but I mean, you know, because she's a good church-going mother, wonderful grandmother, everything, you know. But yes, this is an intense piece. And I think this is one of the things that is you'll find a lot in this collection is something kind of woven into the piece that takes a darker twist.
Yeah.
You know,
I would say that that's definitely a theme, whether you mean it or not, in your work. I read a lot of it, you know, in a brief period of time. I think I've only really known you for like 2 years, but you're one of those guys, man. You've always got something being published somewhere. It's like, you and James Claffey, and my friend Kevin Ridgway, every time you turn around, you guys have some really cool thing popping up in some place I've never heard of and some place that I really enjoy, some place I really admire. But a lot of your writing, though, it has this really cool, like, surrealist darkness to it, which do you think that pops up in Microtones, this surrealist stuff?
Yeah, I think it is a generalized kind of thread that's carried through. I mean, some of my stuff is a little bit more abstract. I'm tending not to read those pieces. I'm reading a little bit more the narrative work in the book because it's easier to understand for a radio show.
Oh, totally.
You know, sometimes abstract pieces, you don't want your readers all going, "Huh? I don't get him." Like he just sounds too out there, you know. But yes, I try to push the envelope a lot of times, see how far I can take it. Sometimes it comes back in. I have to reel it in through the rewrites. You know, I'm fortunate because I'm a part of different writing circles and different roundtables where I can get feedback. And if I get more than half the group going, "Robert, I don't understand this at all." Well, that's not the point of my writing, really. I don't want to leave people in the dark necessarily, you know?
So you fix it up.
Right, I pull it back a little bit. I try to put a little bit more narrative into the piece. I try to not make it quite so, but you can get away with a line or two here or there that twists it, you know, that makes it one of the things I think any reader appreciates is the element of surprise. You don't want to read something and go, "Oh, I read this, you know, last week in the Sunday Times." I mean, you know, you want to be reading something that even if it's a topic that's been written about, you know, divorce, let's say, what's the new take on it? What's the new twist? What's this character going to go through that's unusual, you know? So, and that's true about life too. We don't want yesterday, you know, we don't want to repeat what we went through yesterday today. You know, it's the same thing as a reader. So
yeah, I mean, I totally agree with that. that there's an unlimited directions you can take on any topic. So it's almost silly when people shy away from, let's say, borrowing from narratives that they really enjoy, because you can always put your own take on it, and it'll be a completely, completely different thing.
Yeah.
There's no idea. There's no ideas left that are original.
Right.
Just work. You know, work on the way that you present it. You know.
Yeah. How can you recycle it? How can you re-siphon it so that it's totally Bud Smith? And by the way, I want to give the same compliment back to you. You know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, once we've kind of turned on to each other's work, I'm finding you being published like crazy lately too. And I think it's great that you're submitting more. I mean, I know you're working on a couple of different novel projects, so it's hard to do that at the same time, like to create these shorter pieces and toss them out there. But I'm really enjoying reading a lot of the stuff that you're doing, and you're also editing like four or five different projects right now. You're insane.
Yeah, I got a lot going on. You know, see, like, I think it's cool, this, the whole small press, you know, like I said, you call it the small press, what does that mean? It probably doesn't really mean too much. It's just a community of people. And as soon as people see that you're doing stuff, they invite you to do more. And it's fun, you know. You can take on as much as you can, don't let your work suffer, but the goal is to have fun, you know. So that's what I'm lucky enough to be falling into, you know, hanging out with cool people over at Fez and bouncing around with the Uno Kudo Project. And just, it's great, man. It's a lot of fun doing this radio show.
Yeah, it's very cool. Well, you're also working on that superhero anthology, right?
Yeah, well, that's actually, I'm doing an anthology that's about losing your virginity. And that's
that's right, yeah.
That's coming around. Like, you hit the nail on the head when you said that. Basically, I've got these novels floating around. They're not so much floating around. There's one being actively edited and torn apart still. It's called Tollbooth. It's coming out in about May, May-ish.
Very cool.
And so that's actually put the virginity anthology a little bit on the back burner. I have all the submissions, and I've been reading things slowly and doing that. That's called Wasn't That Special. The superhero one you're talking about, that's Aaron Dietz, my dear friend Aaron.
Oh, that's right, Aaron. Yeah, he was on the show last time I was on, yeah.
Yeah. He's a good friend of mine. He's out in Seattle, and he does Uno Kudo with me. So, like you said, man, there's all these projects. They all get mixed in together. And I think you ought to send him something for that, man. You really should.
I am for sure. I'm already working on it. Yeah, I've got a really crazy zany piece that I'm working on for that. So it's a little bit longer than my typical stuff, but I am planning on it for sure.
Is it shorter than the Bible?
I don't know. We'll have to check with Evelyn on that one. You know, I'm not sure.
Oh, you never read?
Yeah, I would say it's probably shorter than the Bible by a couple pages.
Yeah, cool. That's good stuff, man. Can I squeeze another couple poems out of you, or are you all tapped out?
Yeah, I was thinking about stepping out of microtones. I don't know. You know, you're so busy, you probably didn't notice. I entered the this is one of the good things I want to urge your listeners to do. Start thinking, like, in November, December, about a couple of different writing competitions to enter. And just pick one or two. You know, there's always, like, there's flash fiction competitions. There's different, like, fiction. If you have something longer or shorter, it doesn't matter. You just look at what the requirements are. But I entered a couple, and one of my pieces took second place at the Flash Fiction Chronicles. This is a long name. String of 10, 5 competition. Is it okay if I read that? It's called Gauze, a Medical Dressing, a Scrim.
Yeah, leave us with that. Read that piece, please.
Okay. So the main thing with this piece is it's in three sections, like the title. So gauze is first, then a medical dressing, and then a scrim. So, gauze. When they converted the basement into his room, Billy was too young to know any differently. He just wanted his own space, didn't want to share it with his 5 older siblings anymore. Then when he was around 10, he stopped eating dinner with the rest of the family. His mother places dinner plate on the top stair every night. In exchange, he only communicated by notes he'd send or receive by pulley pails through the laundry drop. A medical dressing. One time, when Ethel, the family dachshund, accidentally ventured downstairs, she was never seen again. Same for one sister, Darla, who thought she'd left a sweater atop the laundry machine. Disappeared. Eventually, Billy was indistinguishable from any basement dweller resembling the spider realm. Webs, gossamer silver, detecting vibrations, lurking toward eventual prey. The family nearly forgot he existed. A scrim. Then one day, while folding laundry, his mother noticed a note, and she decided to read it aloud to the rest of the family at dinner that night. Here is your stormy day, the one with pressing clouds and chilling breeze. Here is your way you fall in step, synchronize laughs and moderate beliefs, acclimatize moods and medications. Here, then, your last vestige of blue sky and fortitude, a melange of mercurial designations, bastion of sailboats emptying out horizons. They all craned their necks toward the basement.
That's actually my favorite of all the things I've read you do. And that won second place in a contest. That's no surprise, really.
Well, thank you. I'm very fortunate. Kathy Fish was the judge this year. She's one of my favorite writers. If you've not read her, oh my gosh, there's a collection of four chapbooks included in a book called The Peculiar Feeling of Restlessness, which is at Rose Metal Press.
Okay.
A Peculiar Feeling of Restlessness, and Kathy Fish, that's where I got turned on to her. I read that, like, I think it came out in 2009. I read that, and wow, I admire her work so much. So that's the other cool thing. When you enter these competitions, I had no idea it was going to win anything. You never know. You know what I mean? It's the taste of whoever's doing the reading for them. But that Kathy chose this makes it all the more special to me, you know, because she's someone whose work I revere, you know, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, I hear you there. Yeah, it's cool, you know. It's cool. It's kind of weird. It's actually kind of weird reading somebody's stuff, and like you kind of like really dig the work. You know what I mean? And then you get to meet them in person, and you're like, I hope this person's cool, and it's not just a fluke, you know? Because that their personality is gonna suck. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Usually it doesn't, though. I mean, if their work is kind of quirky or, like, you know, a little offbeat or whatever, usually they're the same in person, I find, you know, generally speaking.
Yeah. I'm always worried, like, you know, I read something by somebody, and I'm like, oh, man, I really love that novel. That was great. That was really cool. And they're just going to, like, dump a beer on my head. Like, all right.
That's like the ongoing theme of your life is the beer dump.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, it's... I'm trying not to drink so much beer these days.
Well, good for you.
Well,
you've got those lofty goals, bud. You know, you want to leave the boiler room, and, you know, you got to take your pit bull with you. So,
yeah.
You know, I mean, if you got to save up to be able to make that happen, right? You know, you can't be just.
Oh, that's so true. That's so true.
Sucking down the booze in the basement.
Yeah. So what's the deal? So you have Microtones is out now. Where can people buy that? Is that available on Amazon?
Okay.
Is it?
No, it's not on Amazon yet. If you go to the Chervina Barva Press, Chervina is Cervena, Chervina Barva, two separate words, press.
Okay.
And then Gloria Mindock, the publisher, has it's called The Lost Bookshelf. But if you just click on the tab that says books, It's the first page that's right there. You'll see Microtones by Robert Vaughn. And then I have the link on my Facebook page. I'll have it on my blog. I haven't blogged since I got back from AWP. I've been kind of busy, but I will have that up any day now. And then the other cool thing is I found out that I'll be part of Joseph Quintella's Deadly Chaps summer series. He accepted my manuscript that is called... Well, the working title, I don't know if we'll change this, is called Diptychs, Triptychs, Lipstick, and Dipshits. Sorry, Evelyn. So that is also in the works, and that's a New York publisher. As you know, Joseph lives right there in the big old city that you live in. So.
Yep.
So that's coming out this summer. I have one more manuscript with another indie press. Right now it's a little bit longer, more like 60 pages. I'm still waiting to hear back on that. I'm hoping to any day. And then, yeah, you know, so lots of things kind of happening and moving on, you know. There's a rumor out there, Bud, that says when you publish your first book, all of a sudden everything, you know, it opens up all these avenues, you know. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. I mean, even just self-publishing my book of short stories, I mean, it's like, I'm not saying that, you know, you get, like, offers, you get, like, money offers for anything, but people they kind of want to talk to you a little more. They're like, oh, you have a book. And they read it, and they want to talk to you. It's strange.
Right.
Life gets
right.
Strange.
What do you got going on?
Well, I got Toll Booth is coming out in May, and that's it's a full-length literary fiction novel. It's first-person, told from the point of view of a degenerate guy who's lost his mind who works in a toll booth on the Jersey Parkway. And
awesome.
I've been doing these a few projects here, Uno Kudo, editing for them. We're going to put out Uno Kudo Volume 3, I believe, in early summer.
Yes. Yeah, so are you reading with more than – is there a staff reading those pieces?
Right now, our editorial staff is just myself and Aaron Dietz. We're just keeping it simple. We had a whole staff, and that worked out great, but we're really just streamlining. Just trying to keep things as simple as possible. And
cool.
If we both don't dig it, it's not going to make it in. Not that that means
right.
anything. It's just how it's going to be, you know. It's simplicity, you know.
And you guys are reading fiction and poetry or combination
yeah,
thereof?
Fiction,
or
fiction, poetry, essays, really anything people want to send. Most
cool.
of the art gets procured, gathered by the art director. She finds all this great stuff. But we still encourage
awesome.
People, you know, send stuff in. And wrapped up another novel called F-250. And starting to send that around pretty soon to different presses. So
very cool. Good for you, man. You're really cranking it out. Oh, and hey, before I forget, I have to thank you for. I think the last time I was on the Unknown Show, you had on Matt Gorecki.
Yeah.
And you know, Drunk Monkeys, Matt. And I submitted one of my longer short stories that I had. You know, I had in the can for a couple years. I sent that to him. After, like, you know, a month ago or a month and a half ago when we were both on the show, and he accepted
yeah.
it. And this is going to be like, you know, like a 12-page or 14-page story of mine, which never happens. I mean, I'm always known for, like, being the short guy, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So this is cool. Whole new direction
That's
for
a
me.
Cool guy. That's a really cool guy. You also got to send some stuff to the Idiom. You got to send stuff to the Idiom zine.
I'll write
up.
It down.
Yeah, it's ran by Mark Brunetti. Everybody send something to the Idiom. He publishes some really cool shit. It's out of Jersey. It's out of where I'm from. And it's the local zine from the Jersey Shore. And a lot of heart in the Idiom. And
cool.
Mark's a pretty cool dude, so send him some stuff too. But Matt Gorecki is a real stand-up guy, real nice guy. I was lucky enough to meet him in L.A., hung out with him. Nice dude.
Yeah, he's a great
guy.
Nice guy.
But I think that's going to be it for the show today. We went a
right
little
on,
long
man.
Here.
Well, I'm really grateful you asked me back on. Thanks so much, Bud. It's always great to talk with you.
Yeah, man. We'll have to do it again soon, you know. Pretty much if I send you an email, please answer. Don't respond or block me and all this stuff. Just I know I worth, you know, people, please, you know, just treat me like a human. You know, I don't like being kicked to the curb by everybody. I know you guys think it's funny spitting on me when I'm laying in the gutter, but... thanks for listening, everybody. It's been a real pleasure. We're going to run try to run another show right here called Rips and Raps. I haven't been able to get the MP3 file to play. We're going to try again. But Robert, one more time, man. Thank you so much for coming on. And thanks to all the other guests, too. Serena, thank you, Leopold, for coming on. It's been a real pleasure talking to everybody. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a nice night.
Bye, bud.
Hey, Loki. I want to thank you for meeting me.
Riffs and raps.